So it happened again this week. I had to sit helplessly by a family member who agonized over what to do with their loved one because they didn't have a plan in place. And this one was particularly difficult. You see, Steve's mother, Sally, had been diagnosed with cancer, and treatments were not working, and so she decided that it was time to stop and let nature take its course. And Sally lived alone, and Steve was nearby, and she was doing pretty well for quite a while. But last week, she started to have some major declines, and her doctor felt she was ready for hospice. So they set up an appointment with me and my team to meet with them on Monday. And when we arrived, Sally was slumped in her living room chair. She had difficulty keeping her eyes open, and when we spoke to her, she didn't even seem to be registering our words. Her responses to us were nonsensical and slurred. And this was a deeper decline than Steve had even seen or during the weekend. So we asked about an advance care directive. Had Sally ever created a healthcare power of attorney document? Did Steve know who she wanted to be her agent, to speak for her when she could no longer speak for herself? And Steve said he thought she had created something like that when she was at the hospital once before. So we called the hospital and found out that this wasn't the case. Sally was still legally her own person. She had never discussed or indicated who she would like to have as her healthcare power of attorney. And without this, our hands were tied. And Steve's hands were tied too. As Sally was not coherent, we couldn't trust that she understood that we were going to sign her on for hospice, and we couldn't trust that she even wanted Steve as her agent. And Sally couldn't stay home alone like this, and according to Steve, there had never been any talk about whether or not she'd be okay with moving to a facility if she needed to. All she ever said was that she was done fighting cancer. So what did we do? Thankfully, our social worker on our team helped Steve to admit his mother to the hospital. There, two doctors could declare her incompetent. And because the hospital would not release her home or to a facility without a plan in place, they could rush through for a need for a court order so that Steve could be declared her guardian. Because she was still legally her own person, and with no record or conversation about her wishes for end of life, this decision had to go to the courts. Steve was in anguish, and he was still unsure if he was making the right decisions for his mother. We felt helpless. It was the best thing that we could do. Don't let this happen to you. We're looking at creation this month, and leave it to me to take this idea of creation to the realm of dying. My husband Joel calls me the death maiden. As most of you know, I'm a hospice chaplain, and yes, I look at death nearly every day, and yes, I do have kind of a strange comfort with dying that might be a little odd, but I guess it works really well in this job. But honestly, in my work, I see how beautifully we can create our own way of leaving this world. I'm not talking about euthanasia or assisted suicide. It might be quite a long time before our state is ready to come to those discussions, and that's a whole nother sermon. But today I'm going to be talking about making decisions for how you would like your end of life care to be. Last week you all paid your taxes, or maybe you got an extension to pay your taxes. Benjamin Franklin said that there are only two things certain in life, and that is death and taxes. And in honor of National Healthcare Decisions Day, which is always April 16th, the day after tax day, I wanted to lift up this idea of creating our own life care decisions. It was kind of fun to see Roger in the video from Compassionate Choices Wisconsin. Roger was deeply concerned about this issue. As ministers, we're often called into serving families and individuals at end of life, and we see firsthand how devastating it can be when family members have not shared their end of life care wishes with one another. Before Roger left Appleton, he worked on a team to create a mission and vision statement for the Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Jokingly, he said, "What happens when you put a minister and a doctor and a lawyer together?" Well, together they created a vision and mission statement, making advanced care conversations and planning an integral part of end-of-life care. Because let's face it, none of us are going to get out of here alive. And in my work, we try really hard to get families and loved ones to begin conversations with one another about end-of-life care. And our social workers very gently but firmly encourage families to sit down and discuss just how they would like their end-of-life to be. Fellow UU and end-of-life care advocate Dr. Nancy Homburg, along with myself, we see the everyday benefits of having these conversations. Dr. Homburg stresses that end-of-life care planning allows us to express the uniqueness of every soul and the legacy that only they can leave behind. Without planning our last days, celebrations of beauty and love can't happen. With 90% of us dying of one or more chronic illnesses, death is often not a surprise. We can create a plan to help our wishes come true. So I wonder, why is this conversation so difficult? As Marla was saying, who wants to talk about that? Why do we get stuck and stall with each other when it comes to talking about dying? I hear and see so many different things from families and patients in my work. Some families will say, well, we can't talk about dying because if we are honest about how much time a person has left, well, then they're just going to give up. Or if we talk about dying with someone, then we'll bring it on faster. My heart goes out to families who are suddenly faced with a terminal illness or medical treatments that aren't working and hospice is brought on board. But this is nonsense. Tiptoeing around this topic is never helpful. And usually I find that when I sit down and talk honestly about it, the patient or the family is glad that someone is finally talking about it. And studies show that those who have a plan actually have a better quality of life in their final days. So what kind of decisions are we talking about as we make these choices? Generally, healthcare power of attorney documents have you designate an agent who will speak for you when you can no longer speak for yourself. And this is a really important choice. It should be someone that you can trust that will carry out your wishes. Sometimes that isn't always family. You know who's in your circle of loving. You know who will stand up for you and your wishes. This form will also walk you through your wishes for where you might like to live. Would you be okay with moving to a facility if your care needs to increase? Or do you want to remain home no matter what? What about feeding tubes or hydration if you can no longer swallow? Do you want medical treatments or surgeries or transfusions to prolong your life if you are terminally ill? And if your heart stops, would you want CPR to try to start it again? I know that these are tough questions, but they all point to the quality of life you may or may not want to have. And knowing your answers or your loved one's answers to these questions can give great peace of mind to everyone involved. And truthfully, it's not just all physical. As a chaplain, I know that peace of mind also comes from having peace of heart. On these forms, you can also direct your family about music or the way you want the environment of your room or home to be, or who you would like to have with you near your end of life. You can specify if you'd like your pastor to visit or things that you want your family to remember about you. You can be very specific and clear about your wishes. I often tell my families and patients that I know coming onto hospice can be such a terrible thing to hear that you may only have 6 months or so to live. That can be scary news. But there's also a bit of light and beauty there. Because you see, you know that you're on this path. And so you get to know what the last things that you say to people are. You might be able to give them special things that you want them to have, or spend time with them, or write letters, or leave photos. Any number of things can create a legacy for a patient, and that can be done, and it can be a beautiful time. I can recall a beautiful summer day when my team worked hard to get one gentleman out to the lake for one last day of fishing. And as a chaplain, I've seen some very difficult family issues resolve, like forgiveness and reconciliation and redemption. These can all occur when you make these plans. This can happen in ways that would never happen when someone dies suddenly. Many of my families will share that being with their loved ones at end of life was actually very beautiful, and they were honored to be able to be with them as they left this earth. As you see, most of us, 90% of us, will be able to create our end-of-life care wishes and see them fulfilled in some way. And it can give us a lot of peace, give us closure. It can also give us a lot of release. 90% of us will be able to share our unique wishes of our souls with our loved ones as to how we want this time to be. And it can bring us meaning and legacy before we leave this world. And yet, somehow, we shy away from doing it. I'm not going to shame you all publicly by asking you to raise your hands and keep your hands down, but I'm just wondering as I look out here, how many of you are over 18 years of age? And I wonder how many of you have created your healthcare power of attorney document. I know 18, 20, even 30 seems way too young to be thinking about dying. And it's kind of funny because Americans are one of the only cultures who think that dying is optional. We think we or our loved ones will live forever. Reluctance to face this issue of death head on is due in large part to the removal of death and dying from the common experience in Western culture, says writer Ann Newman in her book, The Good Death. Our society has learned to take the dying experience out of our homes. For years, people went to the hospital to die. Now most folks die at nursing homes or assisted living facilities. And it's true that we're living much longer lives. In fact, many of us are looking at 20 to 30 years of living after retirement. And I confess, more recently, I've seen a trend of folks wanting to remain in their homes to die. And I think this is a good sign. I think this is a reflection of baby boomers wanting to die in their own way and in their home and in their own sense of comfort. And yet, even with this shift that I'm starting to see, conversations about these wishes don't happen often. So how does having these conversations make a difference? Let me tell you another story about a gentleman that did have these conversations, and you'll see how his end of life ended with beauty and creativity and peace. Barney was an avid outdoorsman. Fishing was his life. It was something he did as often as he could, much to his wife's dismay. But fishing was also something he did with all of his children and all of his grandchildren. He'd been struggling with COPD and other ailments for years, but he also knew that he wanted to be in charge of his final days. So he chose to create his healthcare power of attorney document with his son as his agent and his wife as his backup. He indicated on his document that he didn't want feeding tubes or CPR or any surgeries. He was clear that he wanted to remain at home, no matter what. And truthfully, that was a hard one to honor as his care became more intense. But his family knew his wishes, and they set up schedules, and they took turns, and someone was with him pretty much around the clock. And was it easy? No. But they all had a clear plan, and they worked really hard to stick to it. Hospice was brought in on board, and that came with a registered nurse as a part of his team who managed his health care and worked with his primary physician. A nursing assistant came 2 to 3 times a week to help with bathing and personal cares. His team also included a social worker who provided assistance with funeral home arrangements and other community services that came into the house. I was his chaplain. I offered support and opportunities for reflection and forgiveness in celebration, not just for Barney, but for his entire family. Barney knew that fishing was his legacy to his family. So he gathered his fishing poles and lures, and he matched one to another, and he gave one to each of his grandkids and his children. He carefully assigned his prized fishing taxidermy to his loved ones as well. He chose music and songs that he loved to be playing during his final days. And he and his family worked together picking photos and songs for his memorial service. And there was lots of laughter and storytelling that happened during these days. He got to hear and see what his family cherished most about him during that time. He made a list of everyone that he wanted to see, and he did his best to be sure that he went to them or that they came to him. I think only one visit had to be over the phone. It was a brother who lived out of state and had health issues of his own. He was the gentleman that we took out for one last day of fishing. He was on the dock in his wheelchair with his son and his grandson, and I never saw such a huge smile. And so his final days finally arrived. Barney was in bed with music he loved playing, with his closest family around him, with the assurance that he had seen and spoke to everyone that he wanted to contact, and he was at peace. He died very peacefully in his sleep. He created his final days. He left a meaningful legacy to his family, and they too were at peace, and they were ready to let him go. You can do this too. You can create a meaningful plan for your final days. And let me tell you, it will be the best gift you can give your family and friends ever. Because when your health starts to fail or you're in an accident that requires someone to make decisions for you, your loved ones will know exactly what to do. You won't be like Steve at my story in the beginning, who is just agonizing because he has no idea. And let me say, it's not just important for you to tell your wishes. It's important for you to talk to your loved ones about their wishes. And again, I won't make you raise your hands, but I wonder how many of you are part of the sandwich generation, where you're raising kids at home and you're also taking care of elderly, aging parents. A couple of years ago, I was in that boat. Joel and I were getting our kids off to college, and we were also caring for my aging mother with dementia. Thankfully, my parents were very prepared, and they made their wishes very clear. When my mother was no longer able to speak for herself, and she developed a bowel obstruction at the age of 89 and with severe dementia, we knew that surgery was not the answer. We knew that keeping her comfortable was what she wanted, and as her power of attorney, we did not have to agonize over the choice to keep her comfortable and to let nature take its course. We didn't give up on her care, as some people might think. We followed her wishes, and we let go of her, because we knew her next step was one that we could not take with her. In our order of service, you'll see a little box that has a website from Compassionate Choices Wisconsin. It's a website you can go to download a copy of a healthcare power of attorney document. If you haven't done this work, I encourage you to do so. Do it as soon as possible. St. Elizabeth's offers workshops every month where you can go for free, and they'll help walk you through how to do this document. The document that you can download off of that website is a standard document that all of the hospitals in the area are using. Dr. Nancy Homburg and I are offering a workshop tomorrow after the final service to talk more about this issue and to go through the document. So please feel free to join us if you'd like to. We spend so much of our time creating our work and our free time and our ways that we can find joy and happiness. We can do the same for our end-of-life care. We may not know when our lives will end, but as I said, none of us get out of here alive. Create your own end-of-life care plan. Honor your own individual soul. Give peace to yourself, peace to your families and your friends. You'll be glad that you did.